Bring out the king. Orso stared down from the palace gatehouse, hardly able to believe the evidence of his own senses. What could only be described as a horde of people had boiled from the kingsway and into the park, past the commanding statues of his father, of the first of the Magi, and of a still unfinished Archlector Glockta, surging towards the palace gates in an apparently endless flood.
"Where did they come from?" he muttered,
a fool's question to which he already knew the answer. They came from Valbec, from Kelm, from Adua, from every corner of Middleland. They were the Union's citizens. They were his subjects, or they had been, at any rate. It appeared his grand tour of the country was no longer necessary. It had come to him. He watched in stunned horror as Union flags were torn down, vandals dancing in triumph on the roofs. A few buildings remained in loyal hands, but they were islands in a stormy sea, hopelessly besieged. Here and there, bloody little dramas unfolded. Tiny figures chased down a street, tiny figures tumbling from a window, tiny figures hanged from trees. The palace was its own well-guarded fortress within the fortress of the Agrient, but the breakers were crowding in against its gates, swarming more thickly with Orso's every faintly wheezing breath.
"Master Sulphur, would it be possible?"
He was sure the Magus had been right beside him, but when Orso turned, Sulphur was nowhere to be seen. It appeared there would be no spectacular magical rescue today. Saving the king from a dozen breakers was one thing, from countless thousands was clearly quite another. There comes a time, Orso supposed, when even such mighty creditors as the banking house of Valant and Bulk must cut their losses.
"Bring out the king!"
someone screeched, their voice somehow rising above the sullen murmur. There was a surge through the crowd, a shriek as someone fell in the midst, crushed underfoot. Did he hear the heavy gates creak under the pressure? Something shattered against the parapet not far away and also ducked back on an instinct.
"Your Majesty?"
asked one of the officers. His face looked very pale above his crimson collar.
"Should we shoot?"
"No." Orso struggled to put some authority into his voice. "No one shoots. I won't kill my own people. No more of my own people," he added lamely, memories of the mass graves at Stauffenbeck floating up unbidden. Lord Chancellor Gorodets drew himself up to his full height. Not a very impressive height, but also appreciated the effort.
"Every man here would die for you, Your Majesty."
Certainly there were plenty of square jaws firmly set on the palace battlements. Knights of the Body and Knights Herald, the elite of the elite. But one could discern a stiffening undercurrent of doubt behind the heroic facade. Laying down one's life for one's king sounds very fine in principle, but when it comes to actually doing it, and one realizes one has just the single life to give, enthusiasm understandably wanes.
"I'd rather they didn't have to," said Orso. "Besides, there are plenty of ladies about the palace too."
He glanced at Hildy, doing her very best to look fearless, and forced out a grin. "It would be most ungallant to ask them to sacrifice themselves. Further violence will achieve nothing anyway." He thought again of the charming stretch of countryside he had transformed into a mass grave and shook himself.
"I'm not sure it ever does."
"You must not despair, Your Majesty."
Lord Hoff wrung his hands.
30 years ago, when your father was newly crowned, the city fell to the Gurkish." "A far more fearsome enemy than this rabble," croaked Lord Marshal Ruxted,
whose appearance had degraded far past artfully rugged and into the realm of total disarray.
eaters, Your Majesty, inside the Agrient, inside the very palace.
I remember my father telling me the story, said Orso. He remembered his mother looking enormously bored during it too.
He never gave up,
Ruxted slapped fist into palm.
The Gurkish were driven out, the eaters vanquished. We can still...
The Gurkish were driven out by my grandfather, Grand Duke Orso, and by Lord Marshal West and his loyal troops, freshly embarked from Angland.
Orso raised one brow.
My grandfather was killed long ago by the Serpent of Tarlins. The Anglanders have rebelled against us already, and Lord Marshal Forrest is retreating eastwards, hard-pressed with the few loyal troops that remain. We beat the Gurkish, but,
Orso waved a helpless hand towards the crowds beyond the wall,
how can the Union beat itself?
Hoff stared about, mouth open, as if searching for a counter-argument. Orso patted his fur-trimmed arm. He had never really liked the man, but he felt sorry for him now. He, after all, loved the monarchy more than anything. Orso had never much cared for it.
As for the Eaters, he went on, it was the first of the Magi who dealt with them, and he destroyed half the Agrient doing it. Baez is noticeable by his absence today. Even Master Sulphur appears to have pressing business elsewhere.
Orso looked towards the House of the Maker, rising stark and black, and decidedly unhelpful beyond the Agrient's walls.
I fear the age of wizards is truly over, and one does wonder, after all, whether their price was ever really worth paying.
Then,
Lord Chancellor Goridetz hesitantly licked his lips.
What?
Then what? Had been the question ever since Orso re-entered his capital and learned that the Breakers were converging upon it in countless multitudes. Then what, indeed? He wormed a finger into his collar, tried to loosen it without actually undoing the hook at his neck. It didn't work, of course. That's what the bloody hook's there for. He would have liked to ask Tunny for his opinion. No one had better instincts for self-preservation, after all. But Tunny had, of course, followed those very instincts and slipped away as the riots worsened. No tearful goodbyes, he had simply not been there one morning. King who? Never heard of him. Orso had to smother an inappropriate snort of laughter at the thought. The corporal had never pretended that his first loyalty was to anyone other than himself. And the truth was, Orso knew very well what he had to do. It would just have been nice to hear someone try to talk him out of it.
Bring out the king!
Floating belligerently from below was the wisest counsel on offer. Orso sighed.
Lord Hoff, I fear I must surrender myself to the Breakers.
Your Majesty!
The Lord Chamberlain looked as pale as his own particularly horrified ghost.
You cannot be serious.
I can, and for once I am.
He glanced at the mayhem beyond the walls.
The time has come for someone to nobly sacrifice themselves. In the absence of anyone better qualified, it will have to be me.
The remaining worthies of the closed council shuffled down the steps after him. Seven old men bent under the weight of their overheavy robes, chains, responsibilities. They suddenly looked like a set of senile retirees being taken for a brief walk by their nurse.
Bring out the king!
A shrill shriek, then a bass growl.
Bring out the king!
I'm bloody coming,
muttered Orso. The palace gardens were crowded with memories. He had played hide-and-seek among those statues with his sisters, playful little Carlot and serious little Cathil. Over there, his father had taught him how to grip a steel. Over there,
His mother had taught him how to express intense displeasure while still smiling. They had never been the happiest of families, but by the fates he missed them. Now he was the only one left. "Hildy," he said, leaning towards her, "when the gates open, I need you to vanish." That sharp look of hers was exactly the same as when he first met her, 10 years old and tough as nails. "Thought you said the age of wizards was over." He smiled, good to see she still wasn't letting him get away with a thing. "I mean, smear some dirt on those freckles, pull that cap down to your eyes and melt into the crowd. You used to clean floors in a whorehouse. You can fit in with this lot."
"I'm not leaving you."
"Of course not. You're making a tactical withdrawal. If I come through this, I'll be a prisoner. I'm going to need someone loyal to help me escape. Bake lockpicks into a cake or something."
"I'm not much of a baker."
"But I bet you know how to find one."
"I guess."
And she wiped her cheek on the back of her hand. He wondered whether she knew he was lying. Probably. Only the most committed optimist could imagine he would live out the hour, and neither of them qualified.
"You still owe me money," she grunted.
"I'll have to pay you back later," said Orso, giving her shoulder a parting pat. "Left my purse inside." If he lingered any longer, he might think better of the whole thing, and right now they all needed to see some kingly composure. This would likely be his last chance to show any, after all. It would be a shame to waste it. So he straightened his jacket and crunched on across the gravel paths, so perfectly raked you would think no one had ever stepped on them before. Nice to see that standards were still being maintained. He felt strangely calm now, as he had in Stauffenbeck when the cannon stones were raining down around him. The shouts outside the gate had resolved into a kind of chant.
"Bring out the king! Bring out the king!"
The rhythm was marked with crashes of metal, with screams and laughter, with a stomping of boots, so many and so hard they seemed to make the ground shake.
"Bring out the king!"
He wondered if there had been some choice he made, or didn't, some way to avoid this. If there had, it had passed without his even noticing. Probably he had been worrying about his mother, or the hook at his collar, or what people thought of him. He wished he had been a touch more purposeful. But people are what they are. He puffed out his cheeks. "Open the gates, please, Colonel Gorst." Gorst only stared. "I understand," said Orso gently, "and I release you from any and all oaths. You are no longer my first guard." Gorst's eyes had a strangely lost expression.
"What am I, then?"
"I suppose that's up to you." In the last few moments before they were torn to pieces by the mob, anyway. "It's time." Gorst swallowed, then turned and screeched,
"Open the gates!"
However often you heard that voice, you never quite got used to it. The bars were lifted, the bolts were pulled, and a slit of light showed between the great doors. The chanting fell silent as they swung open to reveal a row of staring faces. People stumbled off balance at the pressure from those behind. Orso faced them alone, head held high, king's circlet on his brow, jeweled sword at his side, cloak stitched with the golden sun of the Union about his shoulders, a vision of majesty. The rioters' weapons drooped as he strode towards them. A couple went so far as to slip them behind their backs, as though vaguely embarrassed by their presence. In eerie silence, Orso walked forward, his heart thudding, but his face kept carefully nonchalant, until he stood in the very archway. Close enough that if he and they had reached out, their fingers might have touched.
"Well?"
he said firmly and plainly, a little sternly even, the voice of a disappointed father, a tone his own father had often been called on to use. "Here I am." His eyes came to rest on an elderly woman in a patched dress and stained apron, sleeves rolled up even in the cold to show heavy pink forearms. "Might I ask your business, madam?" She snapped her open mouth shut and eased back, saying nothing. Also raised one brow at a balding man with a face full of broken veins and an old hatchet. "Might I inquire as to your purpose, sir?" He glanced left and right, and his lower lip wobbled, and perhaps the faintest croak emerged from his grizzled throat, but no more. Also took a step forwards, and the crowd shuffled away. Once, at a meeting of the Solar Society Savine had persuaded him to attend, he had seen iron filings moved by magnetic repulsion. The effect was similar. That tension in his throat was only getting worse. He worked his shoulders, suddenly annoyed at, of all things, the delay. "Come, come, let's get to it." But rather than falling on him like hungry wolves, the silent mob parted, revealing a man in a simple, dark suit of clothes. A hairless man, his face hideously burned, and at his side, a hard-looking woman with a hard-looking frown. Also could only stare in amazement.
"Archlector Pike," he whispered.
"I think we should consider this my formal resignation, Your Majesty. Though you see that, in truth, I have never been your servant." Pike was no captive of the crowd. By the way they treated him, he had their respect, their obedience even. By the fates, he was their leader. The realization was almost a comfort. It seemed plain now that there was nothing he could have done. There had been a traitor beside him all along.
"You're the Weaver?" whispered Orso.
"I have used the name at times."
"I never had an inkling."
Orso raised a brow at Teufel.
"Did you have an inkling? You always struck me as the woman with all the inklings, if there's ever been one."
Teufel's eyes slid to Pike.
"No,"
she said simply. Her feelings on the whole business were, as ever, impossible to judge.
"Well, I surrender the palace, I suppose. I ask that you show mercy to my guards and retainers. They have only tried to serve me."
"There has been enough bloodshed," said Pike, but added rather ominously, "for today." There was a pause. Faint cheering was still coming from the direction of the Square of Marshals, angrier noises from the direction of the House of Questions, but no one appeared to be hacking him to pieces on the spot.
"So,"
also rather awkwardly cleared his throat,
"what happens now?"
"The people will decide," said Pike. Also glanced about him, at the people.
"Really?"
He gave a puzzled smile.
"Are they equipped for that?"